Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What has the Nasher Sculpture Center brought to North Texas, and how is the organization expanding its outreach to the parts of Dallas that lie beyond its world-renowned building and garden walls? The museum given to Dallas by the late real estate developer Raymond Nasher is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year by commissioning 10 new works, 9 of which will be displayed at sites off museum property. Given Raymond and Patsy Nasher's long interest in sharing the wealth of their collection, the exhibition called the Nasher Exchange strikes many observers as a fitting way to commemorate the Sculpture Center's presence on the Dallas landscape. Joining us to talk about the Nashers, their collection, and the exchange are Jeremy Strick, director of the Nasher Sculpture Center, and Nancy Nasher, who is the daughter of Raymond and Patsy Nasher. The Nasher Exchange opens this Saturday, October 19th. Jeremy and Nancy, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much.
So this is, there's this gorgeous museum in the heart of Dallas. How was it decided that the Nasher Exchange would happen almost entirely off-site?
Well, you know, we were thinking about how to celebrate our anniversary, and really two different ideas came together. One was just the sense that, well, to take a step back, the Sculpture Center is really about exploring all the ways that sculptors make their work, they think about their work, from the beginnings of modernism to the present day. What is sculpture? What can it be? And we realized, we've been thinking for a while, that one of the most interesting areas of investigation for sculptors today was the public sphere, making work for public places. And a lot of that work, by definition, by its very nature, couldn't go within the walls of our museum. So we'd been thinking about that. We started to think about our 10th anniversary. And a thought that was really very present in my mind and so many others was the fact that Patsy and Raymond Nasher, soon after they began collecting sculpture, had the idea of placing work at North Park. In this absolutely unconventional public space, a new kind of public space, and bringing art directly into that space. And felt, well, this notion of art, bringing art to the public very directly without the intermediary of a museum, is something that really goes back to our very origin. That's kind of in our DNA. And so inspired by that, we began to work on Nasher Exchange.
Nancy, can you talk about your first memories of art in your parents' home? Was it, at what point did you realize how special and important all this was?
Well, as a child, you know, I remember that there was a painting of tennis players on the wall. My father loved playing tennis, and that was their first piece of art that they collected in the early 50s, when I was a child, before they even had furniture, you know, in their home. But they started collecting pre-Columbian art, you know, in the 50s and the 60s. And that art was around us. And it was three-dimensional sculpture, but they could be tiny figures, you know, that they would collect when they went on archaeological digs in Mexico. So I think their excitement about art and their study, you know, they were great students and scholars and they enjoyed art. And I think those were the first, you know, memories. Then, of course, the process of building North Park, I think they created their first piece of sculpture. I think North Park is a piece of sculpture, out of beautiful brick and cement with landscaping, beautiful landscaping, and spaces for sculpture, and gardens. And so they, you know, that is their incredible creation. It won an award for the best design of the decade in the 60s, and the prize was a commissioned piece of sculpture. So my mother picked a woman artist, Beverly Pepper, to create a piece called Land Canal that is still there today that you drive by, and she worked with her on that. So that was the first piece of sculpture at North Park. But the first piece that came to our house was a beautiful Jean Arp that my mother purchased for my father for his birthday. And she surprised him with it. And I'll never forget that moment.
What was the response?
He was just so touched and thrilled. And he was amazed at the beauty of the piece. It's a beautiful bronze piece. It's this gorgeous undulating form with beautiful buds, you know, this surrealistic kind of piece. And but I think he was touched by the material. And he would study it and study it. And they placed it by the front door, and it never left the house. And looking back, I think it was a very pivotal moment. And I think my mother understood that my father, while they did collect paintings and pre-Columbian and oceanic and African and a variety of pieces that filled up our home over time, she understood that he was very interested in materials. And so sculpture gives one that great opportunity to examine different materials. So and he would love to look at it and study it and touch it. And of course, you know, and he would let us do it too. But then it just evolved. And as they traveled across Europe and they went to great exhibitions and they began to meet artists. And Henry Moore was one of the first artists that they met. And so, and actually, when they visited him, they saw a maquette for the vertebrae piece, which is part of the Nasher Exchange. One of the artists is focusing on that work that's outside of City Hall. Mm-hmm. That the piece that my parents saw a maquette of, and they asked Henry Moore, my father was interested in that one, and my mother was interested in a reclining figure piece. And so they asked Henry Moore, when it's finished, give us a call. So he did, and they acquired both. And one was placed outside our home, and the other one was as well. But they're both magnificent works. And based on that work, when it came time to find a place, a piece of art to put in front of in City Hall Plaza, they chose that Henry Moore. The Henry Moore piece was chosen, and it was enlarged. And so, Jeremy, you might want to talk about Rachel Harrison's incredible piece.
Sure. You know, one of the things that was so much fun and so exciting about the process of creating Nasher Exchange was when we would invite artists to come to Dallas. Some of the artists are local, some national, some international. And we would drive them around and take them to different places. And we had ideas about where their work might go, but we didn't, you know, say, this is where you're doing it. And one of the artists was Rachel Harrison, who had always refused to do public work. She'd never wanted to do it before, but she something in this project interested her. So drove her around, and the last stop on the last day was City Hall Plaza. And she saw the Henry Moore, which at that time was surrounded by police barricades. And Rachel had long had an interest in the way art museums protect works of art, because one of the fundamental principles of contemporary sculpture is that these are objects that exist in real space, in the space of the viewer. So they don't put barriers around. So they don't. So they like them to sit directly on the floor, unobstructed. But museums oftentimes have to protect them. So sure. We have stanchions and so forth. And here were these police barricades. So she just thought, well, you know, I want to do something with that. The police barricades were finally taken off some months ago. But Rachel came up with the idea of the fact that this marvelous work of art, the Henry Moore, is, you know, a lot of people don't know about it. Here's one of the great assets of the city, cultural assets, and it's not perhaps as well known. So she's designed this enormous pink arrow, which is 20 feet tall and points down into the heart of the Moor. The The work is titled Moore to the Point, a little pun. And it's wonderful because it's a real interaction with the Moore. It looks, when you see them together, it looks absolutely like a Rachel Harrison, but it's also Henry Moore and Rachel Harrison.
Were all of the sites around the city that you are now using for this exhibition, was everybody an easy sell?
We spent a lot of time developing. One key bit of advice we had was, well, you've got to get the sites before the artists. Mm-hmm. Eventually we developed them in tandem. But we spent a lot of time talking with sites, with different people. We realized these were places we didn't control, so we needed to talk to the people who either had site control or lived near there, worked there. Most conversations were very positive. We did have some cases where people said, you know, this isn't going to work for us. We love what you're doing, but we don't want to be considered. And so at that point, we didn't go further. So we took the artists to places that we knew would be available in most instances. We had, you know, one setback at one point where a site we thought was going to work, there was a change of position, and that didn't. But we found another one. So, but it was very much a process. This was, you know, sort of one step at a time. We developed a list of sites. We brought artists. We had conversations. A lot of back and forth.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're talking about the Nasher Exchange, which is a project in honor of the museum's 10th anniversary. The exchange will open this Saturday, October 19th, and run through February. Nancy, your parents, as their collection grew over the years, they found a lot of creative ways to share it. Of course, they put things in the mall. It seems like they were always maybe looking for another spot if something couldn't fit on the grounds of their property or within their home. How did they make decisions about when to allow works to be exhibited by institutions in other places?
Well, I think, you know, it was truly a very private, personal collection that evolved, as you know, over the years. And starting really with sculpture in 1967. And then, so it was an evolution. And as we talked about Henry Moore, they also became interested in Barbara Hepworth and so forth and so on. So they had indoor works and outdoor works. And then as my father built buildings and office buildings and complexes, bank buildings, they incorporated the art in the offices or in the lobbies or out in front of, you know, the buildings, because it was very important to them that that people see art and learn about art, learn about the artists, and relate to it on an everyday basis. And so I think in 1975, the University of North Texas approached my parents to do an exhibition. And so that was the first time they lent a variety of works that were selected from their collection to a university. And that was an interesting moment for them to see their works outside of our house. Mm-hmm. And then in 1978, they were asked to do another exhibition in honor of my mother's 50th birthday at SMU. So that gave them another perspective of their works. They enjoyed sharing their art with people.
Nancy Nasher is my guest. She's the daughter of the founder of the Nasher Sculpture Center, Raymond Nasher. Jeremy Strick is here as well. He is director of the Nasher Sculpture Center. We're talking about 10 years of history at the Nasher Sculpture Center and about the project in honor of that anniversary, the Nasher Exchange. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. With more than 40 classes starting in October, from landscape painting to intelligent investing on the Dallas and Plano campuses, smu.edu/CAPE.
my wife and I determined that the only art that we would purchase would be things that really brought a great sense of love and interest intellectually or aesthetically to our being, to our soul.
That is a little bit of tape from the late Raymond Nasher, who is the founder of the Nasher Sculpture Center. With us today are Nancy Nasher, his daughter, and Jeremy Strick, who is director of the Nasher Sculpture Center, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary with a project called the Nasher Exchange, which will put works of public art around the city from Saturday, October 19th through mid-February of next year. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Jeremy, talk a little bit about how it sounds like, did you put out a call for proposals or did you have certain artists in mind?
Well, we had certain artists in mind. We, artists who had been of interest to us for a while, and also some, as we began to develop the project, artists who seemed like they would be particularly appropriate. So we just as we developed a list of potential sites, we developed a list of artists and began speaking to the artists one by one. Some of the artists live here, and we began conversations with them, and some reside in Europe or the East or West Coasts. And so those who don't live here, we invited to Dallas. We spent some time with them, made site visits, and invited them to make a proposal. Happily, all of the artists we invited were enthusiastic and agreed to participate, and that began to develop our show.
I'm curious about both of your perspectives on this question. How does a work of art change depending on the context? So, if you had the same, I know some of these pieces are sort of temporary in nature, but some of them are more durable. How does something change depending on where it is located in space, whether it's in a shopping mall or on the grounds of a museum or in a private home? Does the meaning shift with the location in which a work is displayed?
I think the meaning of a work always shifts, responds in relationship to where it's cited, and that's why people in museums care so much about how you display a work. And just also the experience of the viewer. Really, art is really about a kind of transaction between the viewer and the object. And so, great works can be perceived and responded to in different ways. But one of the things that was really critical to us in our thinking about Nasher Exchange was the sense that in the field of public sculpture, there had been a real change in thinking that's taken place over the last 20 or so years. And the way in which artists are working in public has shifted. And what I mean by that is that, there used to be something we would call plop art, the idea that you had a site, you would find a work of art, and you'd put it there. Well, that can be great, despite the sort of pejorative term.
Right, right.
But what increasingly you find artists doing is conceiving of their work very much in relationship to a situation, a site, and making work that responds and interacts with that site. And that's one of the areas that we wanted to focus on with Nasher Exchange. One of the motivations, we wanted 10 artists, each of whom represented a very different approach. If you imagine a kind of continuum from what we call social art, social sculpture to object-based practice, we wanted to represent those poles and everything in between. But we also wanted artists who really could create something meaningful for very specific places. And that goes to one other consideration we had for Nasher Exchange, which is we felt that this should be a show about sculpture and about public sculpture, but also about Dallas. We felt that in choosing sites, we could find places that were significant, that were meaningful, that spoke to different aspects of this city. Some are well-visited and well-known, others much less so. But each of those sites is important. And so it was important to us to find artists who could say something significant at those sites and with those sites. So one of the reasons we call this Nasher Exchange, well, there's the pun of the Roman numeral 10 for the X, but it is because it is an exchange. It's an exchange between the artist, the Nasher, the community.
And I think one of the most interesting, I mean, this is the most amazing project that Jeremy has put together, and this is really his idea, and it's just truly one of the greatest, I think, moments, art moments, certainly in the history of this city, if not, it's an example of what cities should do throughout the United States and the world. So I really salute him because this is a huge accomplishment. And I think one of the things that's so important, for example, is Rick Lowe's project.
Yes. You know? Amazing.
So if you, going to Vickery Meadow, that area, that residential area, which is really, there are over 30,000 residents, over 27 languages are spoken.
Yes.
It's kind of the United Nations of Dallas. It's an area where there's the Asian cultures, Africans, Mexicans, Iraqians. There's every culture in one area. And so this project is focusing on how everyone lives there, how they embrace each other, how they work together. And, I mean, it's just the most amazing and exciting and moving, truly.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think Rick's project is really remarkable. Rick calls himself a social sculptor, and he's been working with people in Vickery Meadow, and he found that the reason there are so many languages spoken there is largely because many of the refugee organizations in Texas place the refugees there. And the residents come here for maybe a year, maybe 2 years, and maybe they'll stay longer. But they've had no experience of Dallas. They don't know about the city. The city doesn't really know about them. But many of them have exceptional talents. There are artists, poets, dancers, a physicist, all kind. And Rick wanted to find a way to explore and show those talents and share those talents with the rest of the community. So he brought together Dallas-based artists to work with people at Vickery Meadow, and they're creating a series of monthly markets and kind of festival markets where people will show what they do. There'll be art on display. There'll be performances, readings, all kinds of activities. And again, with Nasher Exchange, the notion was let's find places that suggest Dallas's history, that suggests its present, and gives some indication of its future. And I really do think that Vickery Meadow has to represent something of our future. Dallas becomes increasingly a capital, an international center. Well, that's Vickery Meadow right now.
You know, it's interesting, too, because, of course, it's not true of everyone, but it's easy to live in a city like Dallas and sort of stay in the same neighborhoods where you live and work and not go very far. People love the convenience, but it also can keep us very closed off to the city we live in right now.
Yes. You know, one of the things that we found that as we explored sites and we settled on different locations, each location has reason, it has a purpose within the broader show, but lots of Dallasites, people who have lived here for many, many years, didn't know about them. One of the ones that I find really remarkable is Fish Trap Lake, which is in West Dallas, just less than 1.5 miles from downtown. And it's a small lake, and right next to it is the cemetery for La Reunion, which was one of the founding colonies of Dallas. The history of Dallas, some say the artistic history of Dallas, goes back to La Reunion, because in the 1850s, a group of European utopians, French, Belgian, and Swiss, came to La Reunion and created a colony. Meant there were the scientists and artists and poets, writers. There weren't many farmers.
Which is why it didn't last long, I guess.
It lasted about 5 years, although some of those settlers remained. Nasher Exchange, we've got the Swiss artist, in fact, returning to the site of La Reunion to create a beautiful pier which will stretch into Fishtrap Lake, beautifully painted pier, very colorful, pointing west. He calls it Dear Sunset. One of the things we think this and hope for this project, we certainly hope it will attract broad attention and bring people to Dallas and different parts of Dallas, parts that they might not ordinarily see. But we also think this exhibition can, you know, play some role of introducing Dallas to itself, connecting the communities, the different places, broadening awareness of very different parts of our city.
Nancy, even in a place like North Park Mall, do people who go there for the first time, are they instantly struck by what makes it different from other shopping centers, or does it take them a while to realize, wait a second, this is not just some, you know, concrete sculpture ordered from a catalog to take up space in the middle of the mall? Do people recognize right away the specialness of the art that's there?
I think it varies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think some people do and some people don't. I mean, I think you can't help but be struck by the kiosk-free corridors that are just filled with beautiful landscaping and great pieces of art. And I think the Hammering Men, for example, everybody can respond, you know, to the Hammering Men. Children and Jonathan Borofsky's great Hammering Men, but also Joel Shapiro's gorgeous 20 Elements painted wood sculpture that's in front of Nordstrom's, and Mark DeSouvreau's huge orange piece in what we call North Court at Astra. These are works of art that people are encouraged or have to either walk around or walk through purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
To make people just look a little bit, you know, look at something differently. But sculpture is an art form that you can't just look at it once for a few minutes, you know, a few seconds. And I think that's part of this exhibition as well, is that you have to go back and you have to look at it many times. And it's the experience between the viewer and, you know, the piece of art. And really how you respond to it. And every time you look at it, you know, you'll see something different. And so I think, you know, it's very much a part of the mission of North Park, is to expose our visitor and wit to great landscaping, great art, and of course the best stores that are out there. But one piece that's part of the Nasher Exchange is Charles Long's piece, which is an interactive piece, and he loves for people to engage and interact with his artwork.
Talk about that one, because it is, it's got an aesthetic function, but it's also got a philanthropic goal.
That's right. It's a virtual fountain where there's an iPad, and you can make a $1, $2, $3 contribution to three charities that that Charles chose and Jeremy, and that North Park has had a history of working with over the years: the North Texas Food Bank, the Dallas Public Library branch Bookmarks,
which is in the mall,
and Dallas Casa for foster children. So you can go to an iPad, you can put in your credit card, you can make a dollar contribution, and select which charity you'd like your, you know, coin to, virtual coin or dollar cut to go to, and there will be a virtual coin that you can actually toss to the fountain, and all of a sudden it's going to move. There's going to be sound, and there's going to be a whoosh, and you'll see it'll be fun. It'll just be a lot of fun to relate to, and all of our coins that are in our fountains, we always give back to charity every year as well. So this is a historical kind of, I think Charles has been going to North Park since the early 70s. And he was also struck by the art and the landscaping in North Park back then. And he wanted to do his piece there. So we're so excited about it. It's going to be great.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Penelope in Dallas. Hi, Penelope.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I had a question. I had two questions. I wanted to ask Nancy. She had such a unique experience of growing up with the art, that kind of art, in the home and in the garden. And I wondered if, as a child, if she experienced that as a child, if there was one piece of art that, as a child, she really connected with. And then I was also curious about the idea of sculpture has changed so much in these past decades. Did Raymond and Patsy also have an interest in newer forms like video and performance? Because as I understand it, they started off collecting art objects. So anyway, I guess that's it. Those two questions.
Those are great questions. Thanks, Penelope.
Well, Penelope, that's kind of a hard question to answer, in that my father would always say there's never a favorite piece of art because it's just like children. You can't have a blah, blah, blah. But I would say that there were a few pieces that were everyone just loved and cherished. And I think Moonbird, you know, by Miro really stands out because that's just one of the most favorite pieces. Because it's very, you know, again, it was a patina in the bronze, but it's also this incredible sculpture that is playful and again, surrealistic. And you have this bird that it looks like a child created it, but we would crawl under it and over it again. But also it was just humorous. It was uplifting. It was fun. And I think the other piece that was on our dining room table was Brancusi's Kiss, which really I always – it's just an amazing piece of art that we all enjoyed at every meal. Some more later.
Exactly right. Thank you for setting up the break. We are here with Nancy Nasher and Jeremy Strick. Jeremy is director of the Nasher Sculpture Center. The Nasher Exchange Project opens Saturday, October 19th, in honor of the Nasher Sculpture Center's 10th anniversary. If you'd like to join us, call in to 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. With more than 40 classes starting in October, from landscape painting to intelligent investing on the Dallas and Plano campuses, smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Jeremy Strick, who is director of the Nasher Sculpture Center, and Nancy Nasher, daughter of the center's founder, Raymond Nasher. The Nasher Exchange is a project in honor of the Sculpture Center's 10th anniversary. It opens this Saturday, October 19th, and runs all over the city through mid-February of next year. If you'd like to join our conversation, call 1-800-933-5372. So Nancy, Penelope had asked about favorite works, and you mentioned Moonbird, and you also mentioned Brancusi's The Kiss. And you said, first of all, before we get to the second part of her question, that was on the dining room table.
Right.
I have to wonder what it's like for you now to walk into a beautiful space like the Nasher Sculpture Center, but you have a more personal connection to these works. Is it bittersweet? Is it something you've gotten used to at this point, that it's not on the dining room table of a family member?
Well, I think what's interesting is that for me is, I guess, a lot of my mother, you know, was the real this was really her passion. And going back to Penelope's question, was her favorite piece? My mother really studied, was passionate and addicted to art. And she studied and studied and researched. And I think what's remarkable about this collection, before, at the time this was collected, the fact that they collected this art form and in depth and over 20 years during her lifetime, because she passed away in 1988, and then my father continued for another 19 years. So the fact that they chose this and they loved it, and so they're really each piece had to bring them butterflies and had to be the very best piece that was out there of each artist. So, I mean, Moonbird was acquired early on and Brancusi later, towards the end of my mother's life. But I think in the mid-80s, that's when my mother was really suffering from dying, really, brain cancer, breast cancer and brain cancer, that the art is what, you know, motivated her, sustained her, gave her joy and pleasure. And so it's really remarkable what they accomplished in her lifetime, because this was really her work, and that my father then, you know, continued after her death. So for me, when I go to the Sculpture Center, which truly I'm in awe, really, of what they accomplished, to have collected Rodin, you know, from 1876 to the art today, to over 300 pieces of incredible sculpture, I'm in awe of really my mother and her hard work at a time when in Dallas, Texas, you know, there weren't iPads and she had to go to New York and she had to go to galleries and she had to meet artists and so forth. And so, you know, this was really a labor of true love, and she was really ahead of her time. And I give her so much of this credit. The credit, without my mother and her passion and that she had the time to devote to this, then, you know, the Sculpture Center wouldn't exist. And what I see is this incredible piece of architecture. I see this amazing building and garden, which is a replica, really, of our home, where so I'm seeing in downtown Dallas, in many ways, our home. So it's truly a great treasure that I think, you know, it is the best sculpture collection, the history of sculpture from 1876 to today, that exists in the world, that of a private, you know, collection. And I think seeing what Jeremy is doing and what he has done since he's been here, they would have been just so excited. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to study the sculpture and wanted to create a center for sculpture, for dialogue and for conservation and for, you know, the great artists of the past, but also the great artists of today. And so what Jeremy is doing is really remarkable. And they would be so excited about this exhibition. There's no doubt about it. When I go there, they love to share their art. They were devoted to Dallas. She was a Dallas native, second generation. She was educated here. She was a prodigy. She went to SMU. She went to Highland Park, SMU, the Hockaday Junior College. And she, from nothing, they created a great shopping center, which today is one of the top five in the country. But also they created this amazing collection and this amazing building, an amazing garden that is based on it, it's truly a treasure. I mean, it is. So I'm so proud of both of my parents and their commitment to Dallas, but also their commitment to education. And they would love this because it's all about education and children and ideas and social ideas and making our city better and bringing attention to areas of the city that we need to learn from our history to move forward.
And Jeremy, to the second part of Penelope's question about whether the Nashers developed an interest in newer forms that are now sort of falling under the umbrella of sculpture, things like video, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that there is some video in the show.
Yes. Well, again, one of the ideas of exchange was really to survey the various practices that constitute contemporary public sculpture. And one of the works is by a Dallas-based group of artists, the Good Bad Art Collective.
It's a great name.
Yes. And that work, they've taken a floor at downtown Dallas's Bryan Tower, and they've turned it into a television studio. And on the 19th of October, this Saturday, they'll be, with participation from the public, they'll be filming in there, and a performance, and an interactive performance. And that will then, that film will be then be edited, and it will become an infomercial, which will be broadcast around the country on late night public access television. So this one work of art comprises sculpture, they're building a studio, architecture, performance, video, all wrapped up in one. So there are one of the things, again, that's just so exciting about sculpture today is artists are pushing the boundaries in so many ways. And, you know, truly, you look at really the Nasher collection itself is a history of that going back to the 19th century. But that's continuing today. And artists at the Sculpture Center itself over the last few years, we've done all kinds of exhibitions that really ask the question, you know, what is sculpture? How is sculpture expanding? That can include everything from an object placed on the gallery floor to a room full of balloons that you're invited to walk into. Or one case, the last show we had this summer of Katrina Grossa, she filled her lower level gallery with dirt, spray painted the floor, spray painted the walls, put canvases in. It was really, and you were invited to walk in. Our sculpture became sculpture and painting came together. Another extraordinary work we have for Nasher Exchange, again pushing these boundaries, is a work by the Chilean artist Alfredo Jarre, which is called Music. Everything I know, I learned the day my son was born. And we've partnered with three hospitals, Baylor, Methodist, and Parkland. And over the next several months, mothers who are giving birth are invited to have their baby's first cry recorded. And Alfredo, who's trained as an architect, has designed the pavilion at the back, and we've built it at the back of the Nasher's garden. You walk into that pavilion, and every day at the exact moment that one of those babies is born, you'll hear its cry. And by the way, we're inviting if any mothers are listening, any expectant mothers, if you're giving birth in the next few months at Parkland Memorial or Parkland, we invite you to participate. And Alfredo says really that these babies will enter the world and enter the Nasher not as visitors but as artists offering their own performance. So to answer your question, yes, I mean artists are fine. This exhibition explores a range of different ways that artists are thinking about sculpture, making sculpture, responding to place, responding to situation, and engaging people in their work in ways that are, you know, just hugely inspiring and you wouldn't have been thought of before.
And I'd like to mention that those babies are going to be lifetime members of the Sculpture Center as well.
Yes.
So we look forward to seeing them over the years.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Mark in Mesquite. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
There's the signature piece of the sculpture garden is James Turrell's at the rear of the garden. He's declared it destroyed because of the problem with the museum tower and light. Is there a chance it can be restored if that problem is ever solved?
Yes. Well, the specific problem for Tending Blue, the James Turrell Sky Space, is that Turrell imagined it when the sky space is you were supposed to walk in and look up and see the sky. And because of the height of Museum Tower, you see, and its proximity to the Sculpture Center, you see the tower and not the sky. So the work doesn't work. So Turrell declared destroyed. He has developed a new design for Tending Blue, that the aperture would be angled and pointed away from the tower. So we hope at some point to execute that new design. It will mean really tearing down the existing object, the existing structure, and rebuilding it. So it's a very it's a massive project, and we're not prepared to do that yet. There are a whole other set of issues pertaining to the tower that we want to get resolved. But our hope is that we'll be able to create a new version of Tending Blue that will be, you know, every bit as beautiful and meaningful as the original was.
You may have just eloquently said the world's greatest understatement when you said there are a mess of other issues, but we'll move on from there. So how does it work for people who want to visit the works in the exchange? Some of them I know are happening sort of 24/7, and some of them are happening at selected times.
Yes. So the best thing you can do is go on to NasherSculptureCenter.org, our website, and look up Nasher Exchange, or you can also download our free app on the Apple App Store, Nasher Exchange. And the app, for example, gives you a list of the projects, extensive information about each of them, each of the artists, the site, turn-by-turn directions should you want to drive around. And that will be that app is available now and will continually be upgraded over the run of the show. And people can add their own pictures to it and really, again, exchange, interact with the app. We have a brochure that we'll be distributing, a catalog. The projects open October 19, and some, you know, you can just visit any day of the week, anytime. Others, for example, most notably, the Vickery Park work, Vickery Meadow that Rick Lowe has created, that's once a month, starting on the 19th. That market will take place once a month during the run of the show. But again, all of this information is available either at NasherSculptureCenter.org and also on the app, Nasher Exchange. And by the way, going back to Alfredo Jarre, if mothers want to sign up their babies, they can do so on our website on the Nasher Exchange at Nasher Exchange. So lots of ways to get information and to participate and explore.
Jeremy Strick is director of the Nasher Sculpture Center. Nancy Nasher is the daughter of the center's founder, Raymond Nasher. The Nasher Exchange Project, in honor of the 10th anniversary, opens Saturday, October 19th. Nancy and Jeremy, it's been so wonderful to have you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. We had help on the phones today from Christina Martinez. Christine McConnell prepares our podcast. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can contact us anytime via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.